Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland, giving you an opportunity to share your thoughts, your perspective, and your views on a broad range of issues impacting your neighborhood, community, your city, our nation, and indeed our world. We have another great show for you this morning. The Student First Academy Charter School sets high academic standards for each of its students. These standards translate into a student body that appreciates hard work and a commitment to succeed academically and in life. That is why at Student First Academy, graduation rates stay at or near 100%, and after 11 years of existence, the school has established itself as a strong and viable alternative to the public school system. So this morning, we're tackling education here on Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station.
Community Voices with Ron Holland. In-depth analysis, thought-provoking, and hard-hitting. Community Voices with Ron Holland, giving you an opportunity to share what's on your mind and in your heart. Community Voices with Ron Holland on Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station.
Joining me in the studio this morning is Ms. Phyllis Hanford, head of school at Student First Academy, and Sandra Moss, Student First Academy's deputy head of school. And I am so excited to have these ladies in the studio with me this morning. They have so much to share about Student First Academy. Ladies, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Student First Academy, it suggests to me that administrative and teacher concerns are secondary to the concerns of the students. Talk a little bit about your program, your philosophy, and mission.
Okay. Phyllis, you want to take that?
The thing is that for Student First Academy, our goal is to create what we call an academic wonderland. Mm-hmm. And basically, that's just basically looking at the fact that for a child, as they're coming up to the school, they want to have that wow factor. Mm-hmm. They want to be able to say, I love my school. I love coming into my school. That's the first thing. The second thing is that they don't want to be bored. They want to learn.
Absolutely.
They want to have people around them who, one, care about them, mm-hmm. who will nurture them, and who will be engaging. So for us, all of our programming center around that. Sandy, who is over our operations, is the person that heads up all of the programming and makes sure that all of the teachers, all of the staff there is not only engaging, but actually experts at what they do.
Yeah, yeah.
And make sure that the kids get the opportunity to be very involved in the process.
Now, you're making it fun for children. I remember growing up, and I just had a ball in school. And nowadays, it seems like going to school is a chore for many children. So what do you do to make it fun for the kids?
We ensure, when Phyllis talks about that academic wonderland, yeah. it really is a fun place to be. Mm-hmm. So first thing in the morning, 7:30, when kids are getting out of the car, there's some kind of strife getting out of the car first thing in the morning. And so when they get into our building, it's a warm hug, a handshake, eye contact, and how was your night? How was your morning?
Right.
And it's that engaging, tough love approach.
Yeah.
And so in the morning they do goals, we sing songs, we do chants, and we talk about our school song.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then the rest of the day is really spent on engaging a child in education,
right.
and making education fun. So it's not that we do anything outside of the ordinary, even though we find out now we do a lot of things outside of the ordinary.
Mm-hmm.
But we have visitors that come in routinely. We feed our children a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, there's frequently, when you asked about the staff earlier, that academic wonderland is for the staff as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do a lot of staff appreciation things in the morning. Our students, we learn about a culture a month. And so if we happen to be learning about Japan, one morning the students come in and the entire cafeteria area is actually built like a Japanese bodega.
Mm-hmm.
And they have breakfast that morning. You know, they may have French toast with powdered sugar, and we're talking Japanese that morning.
Wow.
We've selected certain students to actually wear kimonos. They're serving the students. The teachers serve the students. And so we ensure that our children know that we honor and respect them for all the hard work that they do,
yeah.
but at the same time, they must work for us.
Absolutely.
And then we do a lot of great field trips. Our curriculum is a Padea curriculum, so we do a lot of hands-on,
mm-hmm.
we do a lot of projects, we do a lot of experiential field trips out in the community, taking a look at what it actually means to see geometric shapes in the community, what it actually means to build a bridge and look at the algebra that is involved in that, doing field trips to miniature golf, because now they have to go back in school and build a miniature golf hole and look at what shapes it took to get there, what algebra equations you used to get there, and then actually build it using fine tools.
Absolutely.
And so it really is a very fun place. And then we're in school a long day. Mm-hmm. We're in school from 7:30 until 6 o'clock.
Wow.
And so we do our academics in the morning. There's a homework time. There's a lunch time. We have an hour of physical activity built in after lunch. Well, after lunch for little people, before lunch for big people. Mm-hmm. And then we spend the rest of our time in arts. So everybody learns to read music. Everybody's a part of the choir. And then you have all the opportunities for dance, music, drama, anime, film production.
Wow.
And so, you know, that 6 o'clock time, children don't feel like they're in school that long at all.
Now, you opened your doors in 2002. Talk a little bit about the beginning days, some of the challenges, the growing pains that you faced in order to, in 2013, 2014, you're able to offer your students a really robust curriculum.
Mm-hmm. Our beginning years started off as a homeschool, actually. Mm-hmm. And so we started off in 2000 as a homeschool. Mm-hmm. And then we expanded. The state came in a year and a half later and said, you know, you have too many students. You have to become a private school.
Okay.
And so at that point, Phyllis and a team were already working on the business plan for the private school.
Mm-hmm.
And we opened over Phyllis's two-car garage and with 14 students. And we evolved till now, moving into the charter 12 years later and having 432 students when we opened our doors and expanding into 624 students.
Wow.
But, you know, there were a lot of trials and tribulations, you know. Our business plan, though, that we wrote 12 years ago, that's what we're still operating on.
Mm-hmm.
And it has taken us through all the different programming from a tuition to going into a tuition-free academy.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've had computer labs, though, since our inception. That's something that's always been a priority for us, the technological part. But we've had spot-a-potties out in front of the garage. We've had stopped-up toilets in the house.
Oh, Lord have mercy.
We moved into a business park and, you know, we're told that we were going to be grandfathered in when it came to some of the fire coding. Turns out we weren't. We had to pay hundreds and hundreds of dollars per week for firemen to actually be in the building
all
with
day,
us.
All day, every day.
All day, every day until the end of the school year. And so, you know, between that and really refining our program, I think has probably been the best part of Student First, where, you know, looking at moving into a charter school now, we have that 10 years experience. So we're not like, you know, a new school coming up who doesn't have anything that's tried and true.
Yeah,
all
yeah.
of our programs are tried and true over a 10-year program where we've kind of tossed some things out, added a few things in, you know, same thing with staff members, just to be able to make the program that academic wonderland for both our staff and our students.
Now, Phyllis, isn't that part of what makes your program a great program? It's an example for children to see that you're going to struggle in the beginning.
Exactly.
But there are some rewards ahead.
Exactly. Yeah. And that has been a big part. We've been a very hands-on type of program, even for our students. We have always allowed the students to understand not only the academic side of what we do, but the business side also. So when we made the move to go from full tuition to income-based tuition, we not only spoke with the parents and community stakeholders that were helping us, but we also helped the students to understand, because we've always felt that if students understand the sacrifices that are being made on their behalf by parents and community members and whatnot, then it makes them want to do better, want to do more. And that's what we've seen. We've had stakeholders who have come in and have said, you know what, I want to make sure each one of your high schoolers get to go to Philadelphia to check out this program that's going on there. Not only did we say, yes, we want them to do it, but we also had that person to sit down with those students and explain exactly what they were doing for them. And so that's what's really made the school great, is that we've grown together. We've still kept the academics at a very rigorous level so that our high schoolers have known by the time they graduated that they could go anywhere. And we've been very successful in a lot of our students being able to go on to the colleges and universities of their choice.
Now, as a charter school, what are the specific curriculum requirements you have to adhere to in order to receive accreditation as well as public and private donations or funding?
As a charter school, there are no specific curriculum mandates.
Okay.
Actually, for us, being a private school, our charter school curriculum looks just like our private school curriculum.
Okay. Okay.
And, you know, that's the beauty of having parental choice, is that now you get to pick from different things. And one of the things, the question that you just asked, part of our strength is that flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a charter school, being a smaller entity, being a standalone entity, you can adjust things as you need to. So one of the things that we do as an administrative team is after every semester, we review what programs are working, what programs aren't working for each student, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And then we adjust going into the second semester. And that's something that's quite different than a public school, because then we can make those changes in-house right then, right there, starting in right after the semester is over. So starting right at the end of January, so that our end results are where we need them to be.
Right.
Because as a charter school, and for any school, you should be looking at where your results are. And then at a snapshot, being able to pull that information out to see if it's working or if it's not working. And so, you know, as a charter school, you have that autonomy to actually move the ship a lot quicker than if you're a large environment where, you know, the ship doesn't quite move so fast.
Well, let me pull back a little bit and go into the personal.
Mm-hmm.
Because there seems, because you mentioned passion, Phyllis.
Yes.
And there seems to be a lot of passion from the both of you. Why are you so passionate about your program?
For me, it's not even just about our program. It's about educating kids, period.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I come from a background where my community was migrant workers, and I had great mentors and great teachers, and that's what allowed me to understand that I could do whatever I wanted to do and go wherever I wanted to go.
Right, right.
And that instilled in me, you know, not only a level of discipline that has stuck with me as an adult, but it also instilled in me a love for learning. And so when my husband and I got married and started having children, my biggest thing was is that I want to not only provide for my own children the opportunity to have options, but I also want to get to a point where I can provide those options for other children.
Right.
Our goal at Student First Academy, and our hope and prayer for all other educational entities, is that we take the time to look at what the children want and invest not only our hearts, our passion, our soul, but also really invest our expertise in those areas that's going to allow those children to be equipped to go to the schools that they want to go to, be able to really fulfill those dreams and goals that they have in place. And that's really what we do at Student First. We make sure we have the college prep classes, but we also have the leadership piece so that the children understand what it means to be leaders. We have the projects so that they understand what it means to do those things that you have to do on your own.
Absolutely.
How do you come up with the steps to do a project that's going to take 5 or 6 months to do? And what Sandy was speaking of in terms of us being able to revamp a program at the end of each semester, when we look at research, that's what it's all about. From a summative and formative testing point of view, you've got to be able to regroup. You've got to be able to have that flexibility, mm-hmm. that says, you know what, we're not getting 80 to 100% of our kids where they're going to be able to retain this. What's mm-hmm. going on
yeah,
in the classroom?
Because times and circumstances change.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and it can be a mixture. Right now, I think that for education, we've got to understand that, you know, old school, there are definitely some old school techniques that still work, but there are definitely a lot of new school techniques that are doing great
mm-hmm.
with children.
Yeah.
Technology is huge.
Oh,
we're talking about a computer age. So if we're not making sure we're pulling in technology in a huge fashion and taking advantage of those things that those kids learn on a daily basis, then we're doing them a disservice, because when they go out into the world, that's what the world is for them. It's technology-based.
Sandy, why are you so passionate about it?
It is about, you know, Phyllis kind of summed it all up, is helping to see children succeed. You know, my background is similar to Phyllis's in that, you know, school was a saving grace for me.
Mm-hmm.
It built me into the woman that I am. And I firmly, firmly believe that you can have it all as a student. You can be a very strong academic student. You can be very strong when it came to the arts, and you could be very strong when it came to athletics. And that's what I did. And today, you know, we tell kids, you got to pick one. you can't really, you can be a student athlete, but you're going to have to put that clarinet down, then that's not true. You know, you can be, you know, I played the clarinet. I was an A student in valedictorian, and I was a all-city sports person.
Wow.
So you can do it all.
That's
but,
all right.
Yeah, but you got to have mentors and you got to have guides be able to help you balance everything. Yeah. And it is about your mind, body, and your spirit. And you have to be able to put all those things together. And what better place to be is than to have a school and have access to children to help them actually define what their purpose and what their destiny is.
Now, there is some good news about charter schools. The Center for Research on Education Outcomes, reading gains were significantly higher in North Carolina's charter school students than their traditional public school peers. What do you attribute these gains?
I think the biggest thing for most charter schools, it is the passion that the leadership brings.
Yeah.
It is that passion that you have to know every student's name, to know every student's story, to know every student's path. And with that, you can find that individual motivation that will inspire that child to succeed. Mm-hmm. I think that's the biggest difference.
And then also the ability to have the smaller classrooms. Mm-hmm. You know that you're operating on a smaller budget, so you've got to make every dollar count. Mm-hmm. So you're selectively choosing how you're going to spend those dollars so that it can give you the most bang for the buck.
It creates that win-win.
It's priceless. It definitely creates that win-win.
Now, talk about some of the transitional issues that occur when a student is coming from the public school into the private or charter school setting.
Mm-hmm. The biggest thing would be, at least in Student First Academy Charter, the biggest thing is the personal responsibility mm-hmm. that we are expecting you to achieve.
Right.
And so you can't hide. And so our private school students would always say, no matter what we do, y'all see everything. And that's true. We pick and choose what we're going to deal with on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. But the microscope is always on you because it is about personal responsibility. And we teach our students, you have a personal responsibility, you have a community responsibility, and that's part of our leadership program. And so the spotlight is always on them. Accountability for everything that they do. Accountability for their academics, because they have to chart their academics. So why did you go down this week? Why did you go up? What did you do differently? What should you do again? The same. What should you take out? And then looking at behavior, okay? We talk about win-win. That's one of our favorite words. So, you know, what happened with this conflict between you and your friend? What's going on this week? You two aren't talking. What happened? Y'all were best friends last week. And then having them be accountable for their actions, not, well, he took my bubble gum or he stepped on my foot. Well, what was your response to him stepping
right,
on your
right.
foot? And so we always put the lens back on the student so that there is no external excuse for why they're not achieving and why they're not succeeding.
Now, that's interesting. Conflict resolution. I think that is absent from normal public school systems.
It is.
And I think that's one of the reasons why there's so much violence in our community.
Exactly.
Folks just don't know how to resolve their issues.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And that's very true for us. One of the things that we've seen is when we've gotten students that are coming from the public school sector, it has taken 30 days for us to change that child's behavior. It doesn't address where they are academically, and we always warn our parents that that's going to take much longer if that child is below average.
Mm-hmm.
But 30 days, we have never seen a child pass the 30 days to not understand their responsibility mm-hmm. and what it means to be able to coexist, you know, in an environment, you know, that's all about making sure we get along and we have the opportunity to enjoy all of the things that we have before us. And so for us, our biggest thing is to try and make sure there are no excuses for our kids. Mm-hmm. We tell them that they are independent thinkers and independent doers, and mm-hmm. you are responsible for your educational program. And part of that responsibility is knowing how to act, mm-hmm. knowing that your actions is what's going to dictate whether or not you get to go on that next trip.
Mm-hmm.
Not the money mm-hmm. or lack of money, but your actions. And so for us, we have a no excuse policy, which will continue as a charter school. We work very hard to work with our community stakeholders and our parents so that no child ever feels like, I'm not going to be able to go on the field trip because my mom's not going to be able to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
We remove that from the conversation, because if that's removed, then the child knows then that he or she is the only reason that they're not going to get to go.
That everything starts, stops, begins, and ends with them.
Yeah. Exactly.
Now, talk a little bit about the distinguishing characteristics between Student First Academy and the CMS school system. I just put you on the spot.
No, not at all. We get that question a lot.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
And you proudly answered that question.
Yeah. Because, you know, at the end of the day, you know, it is really all about parental choices, and we firmly believe that. And for the public school system, there are some children that are going to ridiculously thrive in that environment, and we don't take anything away from that. That's where they need to be, and they're going to grow. They're going to be the popular kids. They're going to be those kids that are going to max out on the SATs and whatnot. But then there are those children, you know, and I look at my own children. My children, I think, are very smart, but none of my three children would have thrived in the public school system. They would have been labeled for one reason or the other. Mm-hmm. That label, when we start labeling kids, it robs them of that self-esteem. It robs them of that self-confidence that we know they should have in them.
And that labeling puts them on a particular track.
It really does, because they're children.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it doesn't matter how big they are. It doesn't matter how bold you think they are, they are still children, and their mindset is going to be based upon how we treat them and how we label them.
Our, the words we use.
Exactly. Our goal is to create a growth mindset in children, not a fixed mindset. And this is probably the biggest difference between us and what most public schools deal with. In most public schools, children end up having what's called a fixed mindset because of the labeling. If you're in an EC environment, it's expected for you to be in that EC environment, period. And for a lot of those EC students, it's not expected for them to get a regular diploma. For us, we've had children with disabilities in our environment. They've never felt it because we have an environment of inclusion that still pushes growth mindset.
Now, Sandy, talk a little bit about some of the myths that are associated with charter schools and private schools. You know, I've heard before, you know, that there might be an issues of curriculum inferiority or, you know, no parity in terms of the funding that comes in. Address some of those myths.
One of the myths, the first one that you just said, is that there's an inferior curriculum. I know some great charter schools. Sugar Creek Charter School is a great charter school. When we look at Metrolina Regional Scholars Charter School, that program is actually built for children that are extremely bright. So, you know, the difference would be, and I think where that misnomer comes from, is people just don't understand what's going on in that curriculum. When Sugar Creek Charter started, it was very different. And, you know, and the state does a good job in allowing you 3 years as a charter school to kind of mold your students, because like you said earlier, you're taking students from a public school system and now you have to ingrain them in the culture of your school. And so it doesn't move very quickly. You know, that first year, your test results may not be that great. And so I think that's where people then begin to think, oh, well, that's not a great school. There's something wrong with that school because it's new and it has its growing pains those first two, 3 years. That would be one. The second one is charter schools don't have any money, and you have to pay for everything at the charter school. And a lot of that comes from, you know, charter schools do get less money than the public school systems. And most schools, most charter schools don't provide transportation. Some don't provide meals. And so, you know, you get that misnomer that, you know, it's broke, it's poor, you know, they're not going to stay open very long, you know, but that's a personal choice of each charter school, depending on what your demographic is going to look like. For instance, for Student First, we will provide meals because that's what our demographic is going to call for. Transportation, will provide some transportation because, again, that's what our demographic is going to call for. Some of the other misnomers would be it's an elitist. Oh, yeah, it's a place for problem children. We hear that one a lot. You know, the kids that aren't succeeding in public school run to the charter schools. That, you know, that you can take that with a double-edged sword. I think, you know, those children, like you were saying earlier, Phyllis, some children that may not be succeeding in the public school need a different atmosphere.
Absolutely.
And where they will then begin to succeed. And so, you know, Sugar Creek, that's another prime example I would give. You know, that school, unfortunately, that first year they were open, that kind of was the misnomer. And that is what happened. Children that had these large IEPs ran over there. But that school now has some of the best test results in the entire state,
right,
and is looked at nationally. And so, you know, our premise always, at least for Student First and for Phyllis and I, is all children can learn and want to learn. It's what are you doing to pull it out?
Absolutely. Well, we only have a couple of minutes. This show goes by really fast.
I see. I'm having a good time, though.
I want you to address, either one of you, a statistic that really bothers me. 69% of black children in America cannot read at grade level in the fourth grade, compared with 29% among white children. Address that. And that actually comes from the National Association of Educational Progress.
Mm-hmm. You know, the SHOT report also says, you know, 49 to 51% of our black boys don't graduate.
Yeah.
Those are very true statistics. And part of it goes back to the labeling. Part of it goes back to not holding children accountable very young. I guess about 6 years ago, we began to have students that were coming to us in first grade with IEPs a mile long, and they were six. And we couldn't understand what on earth was going on.
Right.
And a lot of it had to do with the differences in culture when you look at what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. For black children learn in an atmosphere that requires a lot of physical activity.
Yeah.
When we took recess out of school, when we took, you know, physical play and learning out of the classroom, then you created a system where these children now have all this energy and nowhere for it to vent.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then we wonder why our children are obese. We wonder why now we have all these labels. We wonder why we have all these ADD and ADHD kids and all of this other stuff. When, you know, in reality, we took out the very things that would have promoted more activity and more brain activity.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we pay the price for that in these test results.
Now, we only have just literally 2 minutes left. Mm-hmm. I do want to get this question in. According to the Center for New Discoveries in Learning, engaging children in musical program increases retention rates and academic performance. Mm-hmm. You do have an arts program that focuses on music. Why is this important to you?
Well, music is what promotes not only stability, but it also promotes discipline. You know, for me, I was in the band, and that's where I learned a lot of my discipline. And we've seen just from our school that not only does it, you know, promote that, but it's entertaining. It's a break away from the academics. You know, again, for our children, they need a variety. Mm-hmm. You know, so for us, it helps to have the academics, the arts, and the athletics.
Absolutely.
Right brain and left brain.
The three A's.
The three big A's.
Absolutely. Parental involvement, how critical is that to your program?
It's extremely vital. Our parents have 4 hours a month that they have to commit to the school.
Now, if there are parents out there interested in enrolling their children into Student First Academy, how can they do that?
Go to www.sfacharter.org. Come over to our site and fill out an application. So either fill it out online or come to the school site, 7020 Tuckasegee Road.
And on Saturday, March the 23rd, we're having a neighborhood meeting at 10 o'clock a.m.
Okay. Well, Sandy, Phyllis, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you for having us. Thank you so
everything.
Much.
I had a wonderful time with you ladies.
Uh-huh. And
thank
it went
you.
Fast.
And then so excited about the school.
Oh, yeah. We're excited about education.
Amen.
We are changing education across the face of the nation.
All right. Amen. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'll wrap up the show. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland on Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station.
Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station. I'd like to again thank Mrs. Phyllis Hanford, head of school at the Student First Academy, and Sandra Moss, deputy head of school at Student First Academy. Their passion and commitment to their students is both tangible and contagious, and it's evident that the students are direct beneficiaries of their commitment. If you would like more information about Student First Academy, log on to their website, www.sfacharter.org. www.thecareabout.org or give them a call at 704-394-8749. Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's Community Voices. If you have any comments on today's show, please send me an email, ronholland@radio-1.com or ronholland25@yahoo.com. I also invite you to visit my blog for some insightful and provocative commentary, www.ronhollands.blogspot.com. Today's show is also available on our Praise Charlotte website. Thanks again for tuning in to this week's Community Voices. I'm Ron Holland. We'll talk with you next week on Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station.